What's up, everybody? Welcome to Comic Book Club. I am Alex, and we've got a special bonus episode for you talking about Transformers Worst Bot Ever, Meatball Point, which is out in stores now from Skybound Comet. And to talk about it, we've got two special guests, the creator of the book, Brian Smitty Smith and Mars Jr. Brian and Mars, welcome. Excited to have you on.
Oh, great to be here.
Very excited to talk about this. This book is very fun. Really enjoyed it a lot. But just to start off, as we're talking, it is your book's birthday. Happy birthday to your book. It's just out in stores today. I always like to ask people this, what it is the day when we're doing the interview. What are you planning? Are you going to sneak into stores and take a look at it? Have you already done that? What's your plan?
There's a ton of comic book stores here in Greensboro, North Carolina, where I'm located. So I'll probably hit Sailfish, sign a few there, and then we're doing a Whatnot over the weekend, which I'm excited for. So, yeah, it's always cool when the book is actually out and people get to see it in real life.
Yeah. Mars, what about you?
Yeah, probably sneak into a comic book shop and then maybe get some dinner afterwards.
Excellent. Big plans. Very exciting. Let's talk about the book. So I think people can probably intuit from the title a little bit, but what you're doing here is you're introducing a new Decepticon named Ballpoint who can transform into a ballpoint pen. He is, per the title, kind of the worst bot ever, but he has, at least as we first meet him, a very overinflated sense of self-worth in the book. He actually thinks he's the best bot ever, and I love that contrast. It's such a great setup for comedy, but even more broadly speaking, to take a step back, and I'm sure you're getting this a lot, but like, how did this project come together? Was it with the spark of Ballpoint? Was it more, hey, we want to do an all-ages Transformers graphic novel? Where did this start?
Well, Skybound approached me about pitching a middle grade Transformers title. They actually wanted me to do an Optimus Prime book, where I did pitch an Optimus Prime story where Optimus Prime lands on Earth. He doesn't know where anything is. He doesn't know anything about the planet. And he actually he's looking for Megatron to stop him from destroying the Earth. But he actually integrates himself with a small moving truck company. Like a family, so like he actually gets to see the country and drive around and learn what humanity is like, and you know, falls in love with the Earth and wants to protect us from harm, which actually sounds better than my pitch. But but then I'm like, I had this goofy idea for like, okay, well, what if, like, you know, more than meets the eye, Transformer, the ballpoint pen? I piggybacked the ballpoint pitch on the Optimus Prime pitch they wanted, and shock of shocks, they actually went for the ballpoint pitch. So yeah, that was the origin. I kind of snuck it in there with what they wanted.
That's so funny. That's always how pitching works, right? Like you have five pitches and they're like, well, they're never going to go for this one. And then they do, always.
Yeah.
No, I'm glad they did. It's way more fun to draw ballpoint than Optimus Prime driving around America.
let's talk about that for a second then, because it is a very different look for a Transformer. They're usually vehicles, sometimes cassette tapes and sometimes like birds and whatever else. But for the most part, like, they're moving. That's one of the whole things about them. Ballpoint doesn't do that. So what was important in the design of Ballpoint to make sure that he was still essentially a Transformer?
Well, he needed to somewhat be transformed into a pen when I was thinking about the design, like possibly that could actually transform. And I wanted him to look like a Decepticon, but also have kind of a cute feature. So I went for like a long head and like a sharp chin, but then kind of squashed the face down a little bit to add a little bit of the cuteness.
Yeah. And how does he contrast? I mean, I know from reading the book, but like, how does he contrast with Optimus Prime, Megatron, and the rest? How do you make sure, other than just size, that Ballpoint stands out? I guess first artistically, and then in terms of the book and the text itself.
Yeah, I guess I try to think about the silhouette when I'm doing the character design, and he just has like a super kind of long head. Everybody else, I tried to make their heads a little bit smaller, so it kind of made him look bigger than they are in little smaller heads. Kind of funny too, with big broad shoulders.
Mm-hmm.
Smitty, what about you in terms of contrasting the characters? What was important in crafting Ballpoint and how he approaches the world?
Well, I think it's important that he starts off like in a place where he thinks he is completely awesome. Mm-hmm. And like, you know, the Decepticons are also mean to him, but he's very, very positive towards all of them. He wants to help. He wants to be a part of what's going on, but it's just misplaced intention. Like he really, like from the beginning, you know, he's an Autobot. Pretty much all along, but
mm-hmm.
you know, the wisdom of Optimus and kind of like the strength of Megatron, like he's this weird mix of both, but he's a misfit. He just doesn't fit in where he's supposed to be, and then it's his journey about how he gets to where he's supposed to be.
Yeah. This is more of a broader question about middle grade books, but because you are aiming for that younger audience, without necessarily moralizing or preaching to them, how important is it to have a moral that you're building this around, or some sort of like very specific takeaway theme that the younger readers can have?
I think it's just the character's journey, you know, where he starts and where he ends up. And, you know, on a micro scale, kids do that all throughout their school life. You know, they're trying to figure out where they fit in. They're trying to figure out who their real friends are. And this is kind of like a distilled version of that in book form. So I wouldn't say it's like, you know, I'm trying to beat people over the head with some kind of message, but it's, you know, it's just the way life is. You learn stuff as you go.
Yeah. I imagine also, because it is a middle grade book, you can't quite tell a Transformers story in exactly the same way. Like, you're not going to do what Danny Warren Johnson is doing, where Optimus Prime's getting his arm ripped off and going crazy because Megatron's infecting him, et cetera, et cetera. So what is kind of like off the table with Transformers with a book like this?
The only thing, and again, like, you know, Mars could speak to the art like side of it, like, you know, what the limitations were there, or like what the things that had to be. But the only thing that they pushed back on was I had like a Dinobots gag that I wanted the Dinobots to be in the book, and we're saving that for hopefully later. But, you know, for the most part, we start off with what's loosely like a jumping off point from the G1 cartoon. Like, you know, it's most familiar in that sense, like with existing Transformers fans. But Skybound and Hasbro were very adamant that this should be a jumping on point for everybody. This should be the gateway. If you've never read a Transformers comic in your life, don't know anything about the characters, this is your entry point. This is your gateway to that world and those characters. And I think we actually pulled that off. Pretty proud of that.
Mars, what about you artistically? Was there anything that changed in your approach to these characters?
We have a couple scenes where people are getting blasted, but there's no like and damage to them. Maybe some smoke comes off them. So kind of keep it kind of a friendly fire of sorts. I think that's kind of, we didn't kill anybody. We had some lasers flying around, but they're not necessarily direct hits on anybody.
Yeah.
Well, on the alternate edge of the spectrum from Ballpoint, you do have Megatron and Optimus Prime and all the rest of the famous characters figuring in a pretty big way. When you have characters like, let's specifically use Optimus and Megatron here, that are so defined and have been seen so many different places in different mediums, does that make it easier because you have that background to tackle them both from writing and art? Or is it difficult because you have to think of, okay, there's decades of history, I need to find my own way in on this?
I think we, from both the writing and the art perspective, we took like the strongest elements of their personalities and just pump those up to a million. Like Megatron is super over the top and arrogant, and Optimus is, you know, ultra caring and ultra like, you know, just wants everybody to be friends. So it's kind of like the broadest sense of like who those characters are. We took the best parts and just let them run with it. You know, those are those characters in our book.
I see that both of you have action figures in the background, or at least I think you do. So you're probably nerds for a while. When did your fandom for Transformers start? Well, where did that come from? Or did it start with this book, which is also fine?
I think we were both kind of fans since kids. I used to love the cartoon. And I do have some of my old figures, like the Soundwave was one of my original old ones. I bought some new ones for reference, of course.
Of course, of course. It's a business expense. You can write it off.
Exactly,
on your taxes.
Yes. My accountant was like, what are these again? I got other references.
Yeah, my studio mate here, one of the guys that works in the studio I work in, is Chris Giarrusso. He does the mini Marvels.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
He's also a huge, huge Transformers fan and has become clutch in my stupid question asking and whatever. But in order to make me legit, he actually gave me a GoBot to put in the background of my set.
I feel like that maybe makes you the opposite of legit if you have a GoBot back there. But I don't know. I don't want to cast any aspersions. Yeah. Can I ask if you remember what is one of the stupid questions you had to ask about Transformers?
Actually, it ended up being in the book because I always confuse Rumble and Frenzy as which one is which. Uh-huh. And then that became like a running gag where Soundwave in the book can't tell who's who. And they're constantly getting annoyed by the fact that he can't keep track of them. So, yeah, that was born out of a question. Also, some other just random character bits like the Lambros. I didn't know that was a term for Sideswipe and Sunstreaker. So, yeah, good stuff. It's good to have friends. Phone a friend.
Absolutely. I got a couple of spoilery questions for you. First of all, there's a great dance song break halfway through this book. When are we going to release Bustin' It Ballpoint Style on Spotify?
Unfortunately, I'm not very musically inclined.
Okay.
So maybe if somebody else does it for me, I'll do a karaoke version.
Okay. Also, there's a great running bit throughout this book where Ballpoint's best friend is a smoothie machine who he calls Smoothie.
Yes.
Is, in your mind, I mean, it's obviously whatever people want to take for the book, is Smoothie actually a Transformer or is he literally just a smoothie machine?
He's a blender. He's literally, okay. One of Ballpoint's big, problems with the way he views the world is he can't tell the difference between something that's just a machine and something that's a Transformer. He literally thinks every mechanical object he sees is also a transforming robot.
To that point, go ahead.
I can say I think it's a fun bit, especially when he's with the Decepticons and they're all kind of ragging on him. The smoothie machine, who obviously isn't sentient, is the only one who kind of doesn't give him any crap.
Yeah.
Kind of just sits and listens to him. He just needs someone to listen to.
Yeah. This is getting back to a conversation we had a little earlier, but I imagine there's a little bit of a challenge given that Ballpoint Pen is a ballpoint pen and can't go anywhere when he's transformed in terms of constructing potential action for him to get involved in. Was that a challenge there, or maybe it's a feature, not a bug?
I don't know. Like he manages to get around, and like when he needs to transform into a pen, to disguise himself, he does so pretty efficiently. Like, people just think he's a pen.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to spoil anything, but like there are instances where it's like, oh, you dropped this. And, so-and-so's like, that's not mine, but yeah, he manages to get around. And I think in the real world, if he ever had to interact like with the humans, he could just fit in someone's pocket and get wherever he needs to go.
Yeah. This is a big spoiler, but by the end of the book, Ballpoint is no longer the worst bot ever. So is there potentially another worst bot ever for the next book if that's going to happen, or would we continue to follow potentially Ballpoint and his adventures? Whatever you could talk about.
Sure. Well, Ballpoint's definitely going to stick around for a little bit. Whether or not there are more like worst bots, he's still got a long way to go to prove that he's not. So, I think we're going to continue with his journey, like in navigating the waters of the Autobots and the Decepticons.
Yeah. And one last question before I let you guys go. When will Ballpoint meet the Void Rivals?
We were doing an interview and they asked if it was connected at all to the Energon universe or any of that stuff. And we were just musing like how funny it would be if like all of a sudden he turns up in like the background of one panel or, they turn him into like some bloodthirsty killer who's like really like, the worst bot ever in terms of just being a bad guy.
Mm-hmm.
Uh, But yeah. I mean, like, it's our story definitely stands on in its own little pocket universe of the Transformers world. And it was awesome getting to put a new facet on that Transformers franchise. You know, it's a opportunity of a lifetime, really, to get to create something brand new in that world.
Well, congratulations to both of you. The book is great. It's super fun. I do hope we get to see more Ballpoint in the future, and I'm looking forward to Robert Kirkman turning into a bloodthirsty maniac over the main Transformers title.
Yeah.
Me too.
Thanks, guys. Thanks so much.
Awesome. Yeah, thank you.
Our sister, I'm going to bring forward and yours and give it to you now. And he said, oh, wow, that's great. Thank you. That's so generous of you, Carl. That's great. But his wife, my sister-in-law, went ballistic. She said, this is too much money. This is wrong. I don't want anything to do with it, and stormed out of the room. And I thought, well, that's not what I expected. Oh, my God. So I realized from that this was not an easy thing to do. So I learned a lesson from that, and I knew that I had to do this authentically. I had to do it right. Otherwise, it was not going to work. So that happened. And then the third thing that happened was that I was looking at my financial statements, and I had more money there than I was really using. It was sitting there. I mean, it was growing, making profits and so forth, but it wasn't being used. I wasn't using it for me. I wasn't using it for things that I really cared about, not for my people. So I thought, well, if I have all this money now, why should I wait until I die? Why don't I bring it forward? And then, you know, it was a long process for me to come around to that, but that's what finally started this. And I said, well, I'll do it now.
Let's back up just a bit. Tell us a little bit about your new book. What is The Happiness Experiment?
Well, this is a recording of the real events with real people who I decided that I would bring forward the inheritance, the money I had for them in my will, and made it a prequest. So it was a chunk of money that they were going to get while they were still young enough to enjoy it, and I was still alive to see it happening. So I saw what they were doing. So when I sat down with them, I talked about money and happiness and how one can connect. And I said, look, I'm going to bring this forward to and give it to you. But what I want from you is a plan so that you use this money. So it's really a big benefit for you. I don't want this to overwhelm you. And they said, what kind of plan? I said, I want a happiness plan. And they said, a happiness plan? What's that? So you know, nobody seems to have a happiness plan. But it's one of the most important plans you can get. And it doesn't have to be very complex. What is it that makes you happy? What values do you want to pursue? You know, what goals and dreams do you have? And you can pursue them. And so I got them to write a happiness plan. And then when I saw the plan, I gave them all the money all at one time. And so then they took it and I watched them with their plan. I saw all their plans, what they did and how they became happier. And so, you know, that had to be written about. So, because I wanted other people to see what they did so that they too could do the same thing.
Which prequest is the most unique one you've come across?
Well, it was a very, very painful and sad story because two dear friends of mine had a beloved daughter and she was hit head on by a drunk driver and killed. She happened to be 8 months pregnant at the time, so that killed the granddaughter too, and also their daughter. They were totally, totally wiped out, devastated, and they died emotionally. They had decided that they could never be happy again, that it would be wrong to be happy. They didn't deserve to be happy because their darling daughter had been killed. Tremendously painful, awful, awful story. So they were grieving 6 years later. And I met with them and I told them how much they had added to my life and how much I was so grateful to them and that I wanted to express the gratitude. And I put them in my will and they could accept that. And I said, but I want you to have it now. And they said, oh, no, we can't accept it. They turned it down. They turned it down. Well, we worked. I said, look, I'm leaving it open. So several months later, I think his wife persuaded him to do it, actually. So they said, okay, we'll do it because if we're going to wait until you die, why not do it now? And they did it. And it wasn't the money, interestingly enough. They said it was the coaching that made the big difference. That changed their mind, their mindset from being so negative, we'll never be happy again. We don't deserve to be happy. And the coach turned their thinking, their mindset around and said, look, it can be, you can be happy again. And they started to get the mindset of happy people. And now you cannot believe what these people, they're traveling all over the world. They're in Tahiti right now. They climbed Kilimanjaro. These people are loving life. And it was a major change. That is one of the most heartfelt, wonderful results of the and in a sense, she said, the wife said, this prequest changed, saved my life, because we were no longer living, we were dead, and this brought us back to life.
Yeah, I mean, dealing with grief, and many of us have, I have, when you're in those depths, it can be really difficult to find your way out of it, and often it looks like there isn't a way out of it, and sometimes you want a map. Right. And it looks like this concept could be a good map for you if you're that. It sounds like it was for these folks. I always like to end interviews by asking, is there anything that I didn't ask that I should have?
How can my listeners benefit from this book? What should they do? What would be good for them? And so I'll answer that question. First off, think about happiness. Think about being happiness. Do you deserve to be happy? And you can be happy, but you have to make it as a choice. I'm going to increase my happiness. Just that, if you make that realistically, I want to and I'm going to increase my happiness, that choice. And then talk to people about it. Talk to a husband, a wife, or a girlfriend, or a friend, a therapist, or coach. Talk to somebody about it and say, look, I'm making the decision that I want to be happier, and I'd like you to help me create a happiness plan. And then work on it. And it's not that hard, but it is challenging, but it's a wonderful exercise. And if they do it, I guarantee they will increase their happiness. I guarantee it.
Carl Barney is the author, and the book is called The Happiness Experiment, A Revolutionary Way to Increase Happiness. Carl, where can people find the book?
Wherever books are sold, and it's now available for pre-order from Amazon, and they can go to thehappinessexperiment.com, and they can pre-order it there, and I hope they will.
Carl, thanks so much for the time. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you, Dan. It's been fun.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.